And I think it's also making sure everybody really understands why we're doing the change, really understands the goal that we're aiming for, and that is, in our experience, turning that away from a 70% failure to a 70% success.
Welcome to another episode of the Major Outcomes Podcast. Today, we have two experts from Projective Group, and we are going to talk about change and transformation in the banking industry, in the financial service industry. Projective Group is a consulting company which covers all aspects of transformation in the financial services sector. And today, we're going to talk with John Parker, who is a transformation practice leader there, and Dirk Feldrappe, a senior project manager. I think, Dirk, we've known each other for quite some time already. Dirk used to work at another consultancy called Bearing Point. We all know him. And he has, I think, a wide range of topics he's been working on in the context of management consulting, all things finance and digitization. I think we talked about some compliance projects in the financial industry in the past. So that's sort of like my high-level perception of your work. But in a moment, of course, you'll have the opportunity to share if there's anything important you would like to highlight or that I forgot. And John Parker, also years of experience in professional service and consultancy, almost a decade, I think, spent at Accenture, but also at different other consulting companies, used to work a lot with CFOs on a variety of systems, process, and people change projects. But since he joined Projective in 2015, basically working with executives across all departments and functions. Dirk, John, it's great to have you here today. Did I forget anything important that you would like to highlight or you would like to share about your profiles?
Well, very comprehensive, Johannes. Actually, an interesting fact, outside of work, I do some gymnastics. So even though I'm in my sixth decade, I've still got goals yeah. outside, which I think is a link to today's topic. But yes, I run the transformation practice, which is one of the five specialist areas within Projective Group. But very good introduction. Nice to meet you.
Great to have you.
Also from my side, another interesting fact about me. I used to do a lot of sports in the past, but that changed since my boy was born. So my sport activities are now playing around with my toddler and running behind him to catch him. And that keeps me fit.
Great. So some gymnastics, some sports with the babies and the children. So also some private facts. Of course, we'll also add your LinkedIn profiles to the show notes. So whoever wants to get in touch or learn a little bit more about you and your work, it can be found there. Then I would say we start right away. As I said, today we're going to talk about change and transformation in banking. You work almost exclusively, I think, in the financial service industry. And maybe we start with a high-level introduction. What are the big challenges that banks are facing today? What kind of change do you see coming to the industry? What's most pressing?
Yeah, I'll take that. Perhaps it might be useful just to explain Projective Group to give a bit of context in terms of where our knowledge comes from. But we're a consultancy focusing on financial services. We've got over 100 live clients at any one time, nearly 700 people in the company. And our largest offices are Germany, Belgium, Netherlands, and UK. So the areas we specialize in are data, payments, risk and compliance, talent, sourcing models, and I run the fifth area, transformation. So it gives us quite a good feeling for the challenges that financial services institutions are having to address. The obvious one, particularly in the banking world, is regulation. There's constant refinement of regulation, but we're also seeing these days with technology, a lot of new entrants coming into the different financial services, real innovators, a lot of new technology that's driving new operating models. Revolut is a good example. And I think certainly what I've seen is an awareness of the political and the unstable economic environments, and that's driving organizations to be as lean as possible. And so we're seeing a lot of operational efficiencies and a focus on costs.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned companies like Revolut that I think are nurturing, driving, but also enabling new kinds of consumer behavior, a lot of digital competition, which I think in some examples you can see this definitely has an impact on revenue and revenue churn. So, like, do you feel like everyone in the industry has a similar picture there? It's like, we have to change. It's mandatory to transform, or where do different players in that segment stand?
Yeah, I'm seeing in all of the large institutions that we work with a real need to keep pace with the digital innovation. Companies are approaching it in different ways. Sometimes they're creating a completely new organization. Sometimes they're just using the technology to improve what they currently do. But yes, there's a need to change that I'm seeing in all of the organizations that we're working with.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, when I'm allowed to add something, the need for change is also driven by the client, the customer itself, because most of our customers are still need to digitize their processes from the front to the end. What you often see is that they have a nice picture at the front, but the back is still like manually, and this is not really automated. So they are not able to reduce costs, although they have to, and they also do not really satisfy the needs of their clients and customers. So how going to change that? You just need to change the organization itself or the approach how to tackle it, because when time goes by, and we already spoke about the increased competition, who's going to win? The big banks with the big tanker, with the big ships who are not able to move, or new competitors in the market with new product services customers can choose easily with their cell phones, smartphones, and using notebooks? Or are they still going to the branches or to the banks, although their websites are not really very cool?
Yeah, I think that's a really important and interesting aspect. If we talk about change and transformation, maybe we can untangle a little bit the different layers, right? I feel like a lot of companies 10, 15 years ago, when they started talking more about digitization, they actually started with the more superficial layers, right? You had to have a great online experience, like maybe some parts of the buying experience has to happen online. But then if you look underneath, if you go deeper, like who builds that experience closer from how do you deliver products to how do you actually build products, and what is the product? What is the business model? Like that's, I think, for a long time has been underestimated. And as you say, it's sometimes then a lot of those digitization initiatives only seem like cosmetics, and it's not really working in the essence. So, like, can we sort of give an overview of the big strategic shifts banks are undertaking, if it's not just about having a good online experience, but also about organizational change? Like, what are the most important dimensions of change and strategic shifts that you see and that you think banks have to address?
Well, it's a really interesting question, Johannes. Interestingly, there's a new regulation that is out there on people's lips at the moment, which is driving this operating model review. In Europe, people would know about it as DORA, which is the Digital Operational Resilience Act. In the UK, it's operational resilience. And the really interesting thing here, which links to your question, is that it's got the word operational in there. And regulators are beginning to feel that, you know, although we're not done with financial risk, there's probably not too many fundamental changes. But what we are seeing is banks failing at the moment and other financial institutions quite frequently, too frequently from a regulatory perspective. And therefore, they really want the operations to be looked at. So that is driving a whole new look at the way companies and organizations are organizing themselves. Mm-hmm. And the classic strategies that we're seeing at the moment, agile way of working is really coming to the forefront. And I'm sure we'll touch on this later on, but it's not just about agile within technology. Some really interesting thoughts around how that goes wider than the technology teams. We're seeing cloud technology, which is quite similar to and linked to, I know, a topic that you're passionate about, which is the subscription approach, which is where people only pay for what they use.
Yeah.
And that's driving a whole new way of working. And then finally, we're seeing data, the governance, you know, how to monetize that information and recognizing that, information is power.
Makes sense.
But John, you forgot something, especially regarding data. What we see is a lot of banks and financial service companies, they do not have like a golden source. They have limited restrictions for people need to use the data of the databases. So they are not able of using their own data for their own purpose to actually identify and analyze the need of their customers. And John was trying to clear it out. The organization needs to change and needs to focus on the customer itself. It's not just, of course, the experience on the web or on a smartphone, what I was trying to explain, but it's more like to understand what the customer wants. You only understand him if you use the data he's giving you. He allows you to use. And if you are not able to bring it into a data lake or a data pool or whatever it calls you call it, you're not able to analyze it. And if you can't use the data you have, you're not really able to produce new products, new services, and maybe build up value streams where you can educate your own employees to understand what's really important for the ongoing business.
So I can see how this is, again, a question of culture and awareness, right? I think we at WorkPath, we talk a lot about Conway's law, that if you want to produce certain business models and services, the similar structures you need for those products and services, you have to be reflected in the company, how teams work together, how they identify with their mission and things like that. But I assume that also here, regulation plays a role, right? You mentioned, for example, DORA is a Digital Operational Resilience Act in the EU, which is certainly focused on security, as far as I understand. So do you think regulation also has to change and open up for European banks to become more competitive in that space? Is that different in, for example, in the US? Or would you say the larger part of the problems and where transformations and change fails is more like homemade?
A very good question. I think that, one of the statistics that people often bandy around is that, 70% of projects fail. And I think we really need to, dig deep in terms of understanding why that is. And I do feel that it's the way in which the projects are implemented and whether you bring the people along. So the change management aspect of projects, I think is a very important success factor. So I do think that there is different approaches taken from the different regional and continental regulators. But I think it's actually the way in which we can affect the change. And I think it's also making sure everybody really understands why we're doing the change, really understands the goal that we're aiming for. And that is, in our experience, turning that away from a 70% failure to a 70% success.
From my experience, sometimes it's also homemade. When you take a look at cloud operations and you compare it to American banks and European banks, executives of European banks are always kind of a bit scared, I would say, to use it, to use the scalability of it, because they might fear they would lose data, it's insecure or whatever. Sometimes they're not really have enough time to really think about it through. So we're just going the easy way, the old way. I think this is, as I said, kind of homemade. But now we also experience they open up more and more and use the advantages that come along with cloud, for example, or the Azure transformation, or other technologies coming up. For example, also the OKR framework using for strategy execution, for example, as a combination and supplement for Azure methods and Azure transformation. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a good way we start off now, but we are definitely not at the end. Banks need to change if they would like to survive and not be a target for our banks outside of Europe, because they're still hungry for some fishes again.
Yeah. I was asking because I feel like the banking industry, with regards to the kind of changes we're talking about, and you mentioned agile transformation in terms of changing really the core of how companies work, it feels like banking industry is different. Certainly it's like different cycles and waves coming, and others in other industries have started these kind of changes earlier. And for me, it's still interesting to understand how much of that is actually regulation, how much of that is like just the history and evolution of that industry and the business model. So that's really interesting. And we might have some regulators in the audience listening to the Major Outcomes podcast. Also, during the Outcome Economy Summit earlier this year, we talked about the need to change governance models, not just leadership and management, but in general, rethink governance. And for me, that is not just a question of organizational governance, but also governance in the public sectors and public institutions and in politics. I quoted Mariana Mazzucato, they're a very famous economist who talks and writes a lot of books about that. But I guess the way we can influence regulation is a bit more indirect only. So for today, let's focus on things we can influence with our work and where we have hands-on experience on a day-to-day basis. So when we talk about agile transformation and try to zoom in a little bit there, can you talk about some particular challenges and success cases that you experienced? We talked about regulation. It is certainly what I've learned in the past again and again. Regulation also plays a role when you think about implementing agile principles or just new principles for more resilience and autonomy in teams. What are other challenges you experiences, but maybe also some success cases you can share from your work?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's a good point around regulation. Definitely, having worked across industries, regulation is a major factor in financial services. But I think if we went to some of the other industry sectors, the retail, they focus on really tiny margins. So they do, I think all of the sectors have their different challenges. If you look at the energy sector, there's a real challenge to make sure that people are aligned with the sustainable thinking of of the world's population. So I think every sector has its challenge. In financial services, regulatory drivers is a key factor. In terms of then agile, most people are familiar with agile and what it is, but what we're seeing now is that companies that are leading the way adopt Agile throughout their company. So, you know, technology is the obvious place for Agile, but how many companies are really adopting an Agile way of working in their compliance department? And so that's the interesting observations that we're seeing now. Particularly a lot of the large Dutch banks are very comfortable with an operating model that is Agile across their whole organization. Yep. That's driving, you know, new ways of working. You know, in terms of credentials, we're often seen or being asked to take teams of, you know, large teams or departments and take them through that Agile journey. And it can be a 12-month journey for something like 400 people, but we can take them through that journey and through a combination of coaching and show and tell, companies can change to a new way of working if Agile is what they think is the right answer.
And before you start implementing the Agile way of working, you already mentioned it, Johannes. Before you start, it's a thing about culture and mindset, because people do need to change the way of working in contrast to how they worked before. And it's a huge difference. Huge difference, at least what I have seen. Before you start using the new methods, you need to clear it out. What's the value? What's the benefit of working Agile? What means Agile for them? Because it's just a headline, it's a word they have maybe heard for the first time. And then they say, okay, there's the advisor, there's a coming up with a new trendy topic, he wants to implement it. And of course, there are some prejudices, and you need to overcome these prejudices and explain it very well. That's why change management, communication is key, how you're going to do it. Of course, at the beginning, you always kind of start slow. You do like a shadowing look and feel. You go into the groups, you go into the departments and look how they work before, and then you slightly change the way of working step by step, incrementally, you know, and then they see by themselves the success coming out of it in just 1, 2, 3, or 4 weeks. And if they have fun, you win. As soon as they see something is coming out, since we are pretty much professionals in OKR, as soon as they see the outcome, not output, the outcome, you've done it. And then you can start really do the coaching aspect for the entire organization, or at least the department, and just follow up the steps you have prepared before, and maybe in an agile way. Sometimes we do use our transformation backlog, where our customers can pick specific topics by themselves, what they would like to start with. And of course, we could also price them by picking these increments and items. So they are not just picking a price for us as advisors. So they are paying a price, educating them on that specific item. And this is a pretty cool and nice approach customers appreciate.
Cool. There's a lot in what you just said. I'm trying to digest and summarize. So I think also John mentioned it earlier, right? Something we see again and again, it has to start with explaining why change, not just what kind of change, and really cutting through the buzzwords, as you just said, right? I think Agile, yeah, some people might have not heard of it before, but others have heard of it and are maybe even a bit burned because it's been used as, yeah, a headline for a lot of things and a lot of things that didn't work in the past. So really focusing on why do we have to change? What's our vision? Where are we heading? And why is that necessary? And then also, what's the value, not just for the company, for the business, but also for us as teams, for our work? I think that makes tons of sense, and it strongly resonates with what we're experiencing. And then you mentioned the role of goal setting. And of course, we at the Major Outcomes Podcast want to talk about what outcomes our customers, our partners are pursuing. So the outcomes that such an agile transformation can drive, everyone has to understand them, has to understand the value of them. And then this has to be operationalized. And I guess that's how I understood you, the role of goal setting with approaches like OKRs, objectives and key results, where you define the outcomes that you want to achieve together. You can actually use that framework. We do that, and we see that happening with a lot of our customers to actually break down and operationalize the bigger transformation goals. It's like we don't just use OKRs to implement a new way of defining the value we are pursuing with our work, but we also maybe even use it for the transformation and the change goals we have together. Is that something, how you use OKRs as well? I think we've been talking about OKRs in product and service development in the past. How do you implement objectives and key results as part of those agile transformations with your customers?
Well, in terms of product and service development, it's exactly how you try to explain it. Especially when the team's working in the product and service development, OKRs are very essential for giving a vision and a clear understanding what's the goal, what's the main goal after a certain time period. For example, if you set up as a department belonging with 3, 4, or 5 agile teams, they need to collaborate on a 2-week sprints, for example. You also give all outsiders of this bubble a clear and transparent overview what they would like to achieve in 6 months, although they are not working operatively closely with them together on a day-to-day basis. But they know, okay, they're going to ship something in about 3 or 6 months. But it also helps to the teams to continuous improve, because they are not just doing like the agile events, depending on which agile framework they use as a team, probably Scrum. But they also see, okay, are they successful in shipping something and focusing on delivery and on the outcome itself? And if something is not shipped out after the end of a sprint, maybe something went wrong, and maybe they have focused too much on administration topics. At least this is what I have seen and experienced. So they have worked too much on the solutions of upcoming challenges and impediments instead of really working on the product or the service itself. So this is something they need to understand, this, that they need to focus on the product and the service development on an end-to-end basis. I always trying to recommend my clients and customers that they need to build up a end-to-end value stream if they would like to reduce the time to market strategy. I've been always asked, so what should we need to do, you know, to bring products and services in a shorter time period to the market? Set up value streams. Do your homework. Don't do allocate, for example, IT resources on an hourly or daily basis to projects. It doesn't increase efficiency. It reduces efficiency. And this is what they need to understand. And I'm talking about this topic with CEOs, you know, and with CFOs, because sometimes they have reorganized the IT department, and then they understand, oh shit, I've done something wrong. I need to reorganize back.
So you mentioned a lot of changes on how teams work to improve go-to-market speed, to decrease the time to market.
Yep.
Basically, what you're telling, I think, we also in previous episodes, we had a couple of conversations about how OKRs can help organizing teams cross-functionally in a more interdisciplinary manner around shared outcomes. So you're basically, you maybe not even have to change organizational structures and departments fundamentally, as long as you have a value stream oriented process that allows teams to think outside their silos and organize their work and their contributions around shared outcomes. And outcomes in the end is customer value, business value that you can measure, right? OKRs, it's all about measuring customer and business value in a more frequent and in a, also a shorter horizon. So you I think, develop just a pulse that goes up. And you mentioned CFOs there in between, and I want to go to that particular interface because I think changing the way teams work and how they organize their work, their output for better outcomes, how they develop products, I think there's a lot of expertise in the market, and a lot of companies took the first steps in the last 5 to 10 years there. But then oftentimes we see this basically colliding with the reality of how a CFO or another executive looks at this. And you just have like the common business metrics everyone has to look at, the typical financial KPIs like revenues, sales, margins, ROI, which are usually more lagging metrics, and also from other perspectives, you know, if you think about budgeting and organizational structures around cost centers and things like that, it's a very different world. So how do you bring this together, right? If OKRs are more about leading indicators and measuring value contribution faster, how do you bring that together with the world of financial KPIs and how a CFO looks at this? I think that that's a key topic, right?
It is a key topic, and the only answer is educate them on a continuous basis. I have a nice story to tell. I was actually presenting OKRs to the board of directors and department heads for a customer of us, and explaining exactly the difference of OKRs, key results as leading indicators, and the difference to key performance indicators as lagging indicators, you know, something you measure as the result of processes and tasks at the end of a certain time period. And of course, key results to make it clear, you can continuous measure it and on your measure scale, you know. And I was really taking my time for over an hour or something. So I went back to my, after I finished, I went back to my working place within the organization. I was working at a client site. And then maybe 3 or 4 hours later, I received an email by one of the department heads who was in the audience I was presenting to. And he said, what was the difference between KPI and OKRs again? I think we can use KPI, right? I was like, oh man, no, he didn't get it. You know, this is why you need to continuously educate them, tell them what's the difference between KPIs and OKRs. Of course, they can coexist. They need to coexist. Both have their priority in the business field, of course, but there's a huge difference between OKRs and KPIs, especially when you take a look at the operational business. OKR is more for strategic relevant topics, for strategy execution, and KPI is more for like the operational business. And especially what I've been always asked also very often, the difference between OKRs and individual goals. Mm-hmm. And it's, of course, there are overlaps between individual goals you speak and discuss and document as a leader with your employees, with OKRs stated, especially corporate OKRs. Of course, they can align and pay off to one of these key results, but there's a huge difference also in individual goals. You just speak about your own employees and company OKRs. So these topics, these two topics, what I have seen so far are the main kind of critical aspects you need to make clear with the leadership of organizations. If you don't make it clear and you don't take enough time before implementing the entire OKR framework within the company, you're not going to succeed. And then we fall back into in this statistic level John just mentioned before, 70% of all projects fail. And we don't want to be part of that.
Yeah. So education plays a major role. I think also letting people experience how it makes their work better, right? Yes. Also on that executive level, what we always try to implement as early as possible also with our software platform and our analytics products at WorkPath is showing how executives and CFOs, of course, can basically extend their toolkit and have more metrics to make better decisions faster. It's not just about understanding that good OKRs, good key results from the organization are not the same as your financial KPIs, but it's about letting them experience, look, now you have metrics that tell you 3 months, 6 months, 9 months earlier if actually the promised or the aspired value is being created. And if you want to pull the plug or invest more, shift resources, like having more metrics that let you drive onwards and not just look backwards. I think that's something that really has to be experienced to get more buy-in, and then it becomes a more natural thing. Earlier, you briefly touched up on when we introduced you, we touched up on change management, and I think you really stressed now. We emphasized the point of continuous support and that this is a more mid and long-term process. So do you want to share just a couple of thoughts and insights in how you work with companies there, right? If change management is such a big or such an important topic, do you do a lot of like one-on-one coaching? How does your engagement with customers there look like, and what have you seen work the best for customers, for organizations that go through these kind of transformations?
Yeah, sure. Actually, before I do as well, Johannes, I'd be interested in your thoughts just going back to OKRs and executives versus different levels in the organization. But I mean, what we're seeing is that you get that greater buy-in if all levels within the organization understand how they are contributing to the outcome that's being set. And I'm sure that resonates with WorkPath in that it's not just about setting the clarity and clear OKRs, but it's also about then setting those at the different levels of the organization, so it means something to the individual. Then high performing individuals result in high performing teams.
It's definitely being connected to performance culture a lot, right? I think what a lot of executives understand by now is that a larger part of organizational performance has to be driven on a team level. I think the traditional approaches to HR performance management they're in big transformation and disruption, I would say, as well, right? Because what those traditional approaches do a lot is over-optimize locally. Yeah, everyone optimizes for their own outcomes and their very, very local goals. I'm not just talking about teams and silos, but basically individuals who have their own interests and then incentives tied to it. So I think we see a big shift right now out there across all industries, focusing the levers that are being focused on is more on a team and a cross-team level, where there's so much potential to unleash on a team and a team collaboration level when we talk about performance. And it's I think the key is to understand and to deliver it's different benefits for different stakeholders, right? For teams, for frontline employees in teams, it's definitely about clarity, identification, showing your contribution, knowing why you're here. It's insane with most companies we meet, and that's also supported by science. Usually you have between 60 and 70% of the employees who initially say, we don't know our strategy really, and we don't see how our work contributes to the bigger picture. So it starts with things that sound very, very basic, but that are sort of foundational for everything that you want to achieve, right? Only if people understand their contribution to a bigger outcome, a higher goal that the company pursues, they can actually innovate and they're more engaged. And then the higher up you go, of course, it's not just about achieving goals, right? We can show that the companies we work with and the companies that introduce OKRs with us, that they can achieve their goal delivery, their average attainment rates by up to 30%, because just certain behaviors change how companies and teams define and pursue goals. And then the second part, besides just achieving goals, which has, if you talk about 70% failed projects, major business value, it's avoiding waste, right? As I said earlier, pulling the plug earlier, seeing where things are not, they're just driving output, but not outcomes. And I think that's a very attractive value proposition to any kind of executive, but particularly CFOs, and particularly in economic times like we have it right now.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly sounds like we're aligned. Going back to change management briefly, I think, what a lot of people will recognize is that even if you have a very successful project in the first 3 months, it still takes a whole year to embed something and create a legacy. So we focus a lot on making change stick. That's one of the big phrases that we use. An emerging methodology that is becoming quite well known now is ADKAR. And this is all about the recognizing an individual needs to go through 4 or 5 steps in order for change to stick. So all of our projects now have what we call a business adoption element, which is taking ADKAR and similar thinking to ensure that people are constantly communicated with. We constantly check that the solution that we started thinking about is still relevant by the end of the project. And then we ensure there's full communication and training afterwards.
Got it. Makes sense. I would love to go a little bit deeper into that, but I think today we won't have enough time. So that's almost an episode for itself, talking about change management and your your experiences, how you work there, different models and approaches you work with. For today, however, I would like to already come to sort of like the closing round where we ask our guests a couple of questions, and then we'll take your answers as an inspiration and put them into the show notes as well. I don't know if you've aligned on answers or if we will have two answers, but definitely we'll have some interesting suggestions, I'm sure, when we now come to the closing questions around books and podcast recommendations. Yeah. So what are some books that you recently read, maybe also some all-time favorites that you think could be relevant for our listeners that you would like to recommend?
Shall I go first?
Go first, John.
Right. I've got a very interesting one, Johannes, for you. It's not a recent book. It's 2005, but it's called The Purple Cow. And it's all about transforming your business and being remarkable. And it's a lovely set of short anecdotes about really how people separate themselves from the norm. Some fantastic stories, and it really made a massive difference to me. And then I have some standard financial services books, which are real classics. So Achieving Transformational and Renewal of Financial Services and Transforming Financial Institutions. One of them is about case studies, and the other one is sort of physically how do you actually do it. But they're really interesting books that I've got on my shelf. And finally, we concentrate a lot on well-being here in Projective Group. A recent book I read is called The Happiness Trap. And that's all about understanding your own values and mindfulness and how to be happy with yourself.
Very nice. Any recommendations from you, Derek, as well?
I'm recently listened to two books. Since I don't have time to read, I'm listening to the books while I'm driving in the car. And the first book I would like to mention is called A Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. It's by Mark Manson.
Yep.
I guess you have heard about it. He argues that a constant pursuit of positivity is itself a negative endeavor, And instead of that, he suggests that we can learn to cope with life's difficulties, embrace our flaws and insecurities, and stop worrying about insignificant things. And I like this aspect. It's perfect. And the second book I would like to mention is it's more like a DevOps handbook. At least DevOps business cases were described. It's called the Phoenix Project. I don't know the author, but it's very interesting. I'm not through. I'm in the middle of the book itself, but it's very, very interesting. And it's about I think it's a CFO of an industry company who has several issues within the IT department, and he's always going back to one of his right-handed guys who always solves the problem. And he's such a professional that he's not able to share his expertise, his knowledge. So he's kind of a bottleneck, although he's also a carrier of knowledge. And this is very interesting how he's going to solve this challenge over time. That's very interesting.
Cool. So that's a lot already. You said listening to books, so that's a perfect bridge to asking for a podcast. Do you guys listen to any kind of podcast that you would like to suggest?
I'm here in the UK, Johannes, so I quite like the BBC. And there's a podcast called The Digital Planet. So that's one of the ones that I follow. Along with, of course, there's some great, I've got a great set of podcasts through WorkPath as well. So very interesting there.
Cool. And how about you, Dick?
I'm listening regularly to two podcasts, the one on a daily business and the other one on a weekly business. The first, I think you have heard about the two of that. The first is called The Pioneer Briefing, by Gabor Steingart. He used to work for Handelsblatt, but now he has founded his own company and gives you a very good overview what happened overnight and what's going to happen on the upcoming day. That's pretty good for me, especially as an advisor, as a management consultant, to know what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And the second podcast is the Finanzszene, it's called. It's about all news topics and also interesting guests of the financial services industry, mostly focusing on Germany and the Germany, Switzerland, Austria region. But it's worth listening.
Cool. Then thanks a lot. We're going to put all of that, of course, into the show notes. So that's for some of you who might be heading towards their well-deserved vacations and holidays, some good inspiration in there. Last question then. Where can our listeners find out more about you? How can they reach out if they want to engage?
I direct people to the Projective Group website, and you'll be able to connect with our five practice areas and transformation, and of course LinkedIn as well, directly to me if necessary.
The same for me. In addition, of course, people can also find me next to LinkedIn on Sing. For the Germans.
Okay, perfect. Then thank you very much for your time. Thanks for all of these insights and then also the interesting recommendations. Hope to continue the conversation soon. And for today, I wish you a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you very much, Johannes.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for tuning in today. If you found this episode valuable, please subscribe to the Major Outcomes podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other major platform you might be using. Also, we'd be excited if you'd leave us a review. This helps us grow the community and spread the outcome mindset. See you on the next episode.